From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of March, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, consumer prices in China were up sharply in February. The U.S. House Committee on Ag has taken some pot shots at U.S. EPA, and the chair of the Senate Finance Committee doubts the three pending free trade agreements will be approved unless they're presented as a single deal. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. Our feature comes from USDA today. It's titled, High Prices, the Big Mover for Food Producers and Consumers. We'll have more with Gary Crawford. And as we close out our program, we'll talk with Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center and will give us the forecast for the weekend. It all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures were sharply lower. The March contract in the wheat at 695, down 19. May at 718 and three quarters, 21 and three quarters lower. July at 750 and three quarters, down 21 and three quarters as well. That's the harvest month for the soft red. March in Kansas City, down 18 and a half for the hard red at $8.20 and a half. March corn futures back in Chicago, $6.59 and a quarter, 17 cents lower. May at 664 and a quarter, down 18 and a half. July, 670 and three quarters, down 18 and a quarter. In September, 622 and three quarters, 12 and three quarters lower. December futures there for the new crop, $5.77 and three quarters, 9.5 cents lower. March soybeans at 1326 and a half, down 22 and a quarter. May down 21 at 1334 and a half. July, 1342 and a half, down 21 and a quarter. And August at 1336 and a quarter, down 21. November beans, $13 even, 21 cents lower. March bean meal at $3.46.10, down $3. March soybean oil at $55.49, down 99 cents. The live cattle futures finished the April down 52.5 at 117.12.5. March futures at 131.55 or 25 cents lower. April contract there, 32.5 cents higher. That's the only green in the CME all day long at 134.52.5. And April lean hogs, 88.15, down $1.70. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Ethanol trading at $2.44.09, down 5.8. Crude oil at $100.90 a barrel, down $1.79. Natural gas at $3.88.09, 5.9 higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel, 2 cents lower at $3.02.4. And the gold futures on the day, up $9.30 at $1,421.50 an ounce. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 60 points higher at 12,045. The dollar down 0.49 at 76.7. And the CRB index at 351.86. is down 2.59 on the day. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area says today it'll be mostly sunny as it is. A high near 49 degrees. South-southwest winds at 9 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy. A low of 39. Southwest winds at 10 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way to 16 and all the way up to 24, actually. And then on tomorrow, partly sunny skies. A high near 51 degrees. Breezy. A west-northwest wind between 14 and 22. That'll gust as high as 33. Saturday night, partly cloudy. A low of 27. North-northwest winds at 9 to 14. Gusting as high as 20. And Sunday should be partly sunny. A high near 43 degrees. North-northeast winds at 7 to 9. By the time we get to Sunday night, partly cloudy skies, a low of 26. Monday, mostly sunny, a high of 46. Monday night, cloudy, a low of 29. Tuesday, partly sunny, a high of 54. Tuesday night, next week, mostly cloudy, a low of 38. Wednesday, the sunny, and a high of 61 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 43. And we top her out on Thursday, partly sunny, a high near 66 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour and we talk with Steve Hilberg from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural commodity markets, Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, overnight we had some rough news around the planet, a tsunami that came as part of an earthquake in Japan, and it had reverberations in Chicago even.
Yeah, a lot of reverberations in Chicago, and what we also noticed here today, Todd, was that the diversification or the divergence between the stocks and the riskier assets and commodities as a riskier asset, that also occurred. In other words, we were making new lows in the corn as the S&P 500 was getting ready to make some new highs, and as the dollar was making new lows, we were seeing the wheat and the beans fall towards their daily lows for the day session. And I think what I figured out at that point it was that maybe because Japan is the number one buyer usually of U.S. wheat and the number one or to number three buyer of U.S. corn year after year and the number one pork importer, that the trade is starting to try and split out in the short term here, trading less fear and maybe more reality as the day went on. We had a nice recovery in KC wheat and in December corn, and that was great to see, but those gains could not be held onto, and the selling resumed. And so I think what we're finding now as we close out the week is we're seeing a lot of chart damage that, it, for me in particular, because I was relying heavily upon some commodity index charts to hold some trend lines, those trend lines did not hold. So I'm going to follow through with the analysis of recommending getting some fresh corn hedges in place next week.
Let's go back and take a look at the earthquake itself and talk about the impact and why that impacts the marketplace. You mentioned that corn to Japan is, I'm sorry, that Japan is either the number one or three importer of U.S. corn, number one importer of pork from the United States. So it's really about the economics and who's using U.S. goods, right?
That's part of it. I think the bottom line right now is that all the Japanese ports are closed in that country, and I think the immediate shutdown of demand is what the trade initially looked at last night after the quake hit. The stock market fell with the commodities. All risky assets were thrown out, and we ran to kind of a safe haven mindset. But that's where I talk about this divergence. I think the other big point about Japan is we also had Chinese inflation data for February. That got understandably swept under the rug by what happened in Japan this morning. But that inflation data continues to show a red-hot Chinese economy, and one that the People's Bank of China probably needs to get to slow down a little bit more. So we have an actual natural occurrence in Japan that is most likely going to slow down the demand side. We have something in China that is, you know, more man-made, so to speak, that is going to probably slow down their demand. I think that's what the trade has to look at right now, and that's what they continue to look at. So we have a Chinese inflation number. We have the Japanese issue. We have the USDA report providing no support. We have the Middle East still unresolved as far as high crude oil prices, further limiting the global economy. And now we've lost our technical support in terms of some of these key sub-indexes of grain and commodity indexes and agriculture commodity indexes. That's what I line up at the end of the week and say, okay, this is a place where you start to hedge and hope you're wrong because these things are lining up against you all at once.
All right, so you're going to hedge how much of the corn crop?
Well, 25% is what I'm going to start off with on Monday, and what my game plan would be is to stay with the May. The working theory I have right now is I want to get as sensitive as I can with bought puts. I don't want to do any short futures at this stage. I want to get as sensitive as I can and as cost-effective as I can, so I want to do May. And the other part of the equation is May works well from a standpoint of the duration of the downside. I think that a lot of the downside pressure will be over with by the time we get to the acreage report at the end of the month. So I'm really looking at these next 2 weeks as the heart and soul of where I'm most fearful of another slide by the funds and technically led selling.
Any concerns about the soybeans?
Not as much because I've already got 50% of that sold. Now, we talked at the beef house meeting. By the way, you and Dave did a wonderful job at the beef house meeting.
Thank you.
The 1270 level in November beans is absolutely critical to hold, and that's a huge support for me. If we would go below that, especially on a weekly close, and that was actually last night's low in the Globex trade, If we'd fall below that 1270 level in November, I think then you're opening yourself to up to another 60 to 75 cents lower trade. And you also hurt, I think, the weekly and monthly charts enough that you're probably going to have to rely upon something like weather in the middle of the summer to regenerate the type of strength that we saw here recently to be able to get us back up to that $14 high in November beans. So I just can't lose that 1270 level in November beans. If I do, then I'll have to increase and go over 50% hedge. But here again, I'm going to do it on paper if it's before planting time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a good weekend.
You too. And that is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be here in just a moment to take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, China's consumer prices rose sharply again in February, despite government efforts to cool surging inflation. The announcement today came after Beijing promised sweeping efforts this week to improve life for China's poor majority with higher wages and subsidies. Inflation remained elevated in February at 4.9%. Food price inflation unexpectedly accelerated to 11% from January's 10.3% rate. Economists expect more sharp price rises this year because China faces a problem it cannot quickly fix. Demand is outstripping food supplies, while high global commodity prices mean it can't fill the gap cheaply with imports. The U.S. House Committee on Agriculture took shots at the EPA during a hearing yesterday, indicating that the agency is out of touch with agriculture and relies too much on court settlements to direct policies that affect farmers. Members of the committee questioned EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson about the agency's track record of more often settling lawsuits with environmental groups rather than challenging them in court. Multiple committee members argued those lawsuits most often result in EPA handing down regulations that hurt agriculture. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus says he does not believe Congress will approve any of the three pending free trade agreements with Colombia, Panama, or South Korea unless the three either are submitted as a package to be voted on together or are considered by Congress individually, but over a relatively short period of time. This week, U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk declined to provide a specific timetable for moving forward on either the Colombia or Panama PACs, something the committee leadership had requested. House Representative Louise Slaughter this week reintroduced legislation aimed at limiting what she calls the overuse of antibiotics in livestock. Her proposal would limit the use of seven classes of antibiotics currently used to treat animals and preserve their use for humans. The United Nations expressed serious concerns today about the impact of the Libyan uprising on food security across North Africa because of the region's dependency on cereal imports. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization added disruption to markets from which farmers secure seeds and fertilizers also threatened agricultural production and food security. Libya, which relies on imports for more than 90% of its food, is believed to have about 4 months of food supplies in the country. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. We'll record that second program at 4:30 this afternoon. Our guest is Jim Bauer. We'll post it to the website at about 6 o'clock this evening. Up next, you know, this year could be a year in which many farmers take in record high receipts, but a year in which consumers pay much higher prices for food. USDA's Gary Crawford presents a capsule version of the recent Agriculture Department's Outlook Forum. At the forum, dozens of experts made their prognostications for what 2011 will hold for food producers and food shoppers.
I am very pleased to welcome you to the 2011 Agricultural Outlook Forum.
Deputy Secretary of Agriculture Kathleen Merrigan opening up the 87th Annual Department of Agriculture Outlook Forum, in which thousands of experts in food, agriculture, education, economics, you name it, gathered outside of Washington, D.C. a few days ago to share their ideas about what this year and future years hold for producers and consumers of food and agricultural products. We'll give you a capsule version of this two-day event on this edition of Agriculture USA. I'm Gary Crawford.
We are expecting some fairly large price increases over the next year.
That is the chief economist for the Agriculture Department, Joe Glauber, and that statement pretty much covers the theme of this year's forum, the moving force, price hikes at almost all levels and in almost all parts of the food and agriculture business. Of course, he was speaking at the Outlook Forum, Outlook. Now, in my mind, Outlook means good things on the horizon, and that's true for most folks producing our food, but for consumers buying it, it may be more like look out, but we'll get to that in a minute. Back in 2009, farmers saw the full effects of the recession early on, with lower prices for their products, a fall in overall incomes, and then in the second half of last year, a resurgence in demand in the economy and a big upsurge in farm product prices. The temperature of the agricultural economy has been rising, and you'll see why I use that temperature metaphor as Joe Glauber gives the new forecast for this year's national net income for farmers.
Net cash income at $98.6 billion.
98.6. Get it? Normal temperature for humans. A record income it will be, though, for farmers as a whole. Several reasons. One, simply very high prices developing for many farm products in the face of growing economies around the world and a drawdown in the stock levels of many crops. And so USDA analysts are forecasting wheat prices to rise 17% this year compared to last. Corn, a 52% hike. Soybeans, 22%. Cotton, a 30% hike in prices. And that's just the price projections being made early in this year. As one economist, Roger Hoskins, put it.
What do you want to bet we'll revise that?
Yeah, he meant revise it up. Now, all of this is great for producers of crops, so great that
we're looking at an additional 9.8 million acres coming into production in 2011.
Chief Economist Joe Glauber, and the country will need all the production it can get because of a huge demand for U.S. ag products in other countries. Joe Glauber is predicting a big export year in the making with sales this fiscal year that could hit $135.5 billion.
That's a record.
Now, the ag products we import into this country will set a record, too, but ag trade will be in this country's favor to the tune of a $47.5 billion trade surplus for agriculture.
That could not have been done but for the extraordinary productivity that American farmers have reflected.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says every $1 billion of ag trade creates 1,000 jobs.
And when we do $135 billion worth of trade, that translates into hundreds of thousands of people who were employed off the farm.
Now, all of this sounds wonderful, especially for crop producers, but for the livestock producers, those who have to buy the corn, soybean meal, and other crops to feed their livestock, high crop prices are a problem. Hog and beef producers began cutting their herds and their production back in 2008 when grain prices shot up very high. And the contraction of the herds is still going on. Cuts in pork and beef production recently have caused cattle and hog prices to rise, but as one livestock analyst put it,
despite the relatively high prices for cattle, hogs, and poultry, returns are going to be shrinking.
Income for livestock producers will be coming down, not up, according to Shea O'Shagham.
Now, this doesn't mean that there's not going to be some producers that may remain profitable.
But some will not make a profit, and many will see profits sliced. But again, almost all farmers, crops, and livestock will be getting much higher prices for their products. That's the outlook for farmers. But again, for consumers, it is more like look out. Now, last year, a great year at the food store. Retail food prices were actually lower than the year before for most of 2010.
And that's not going to be the case in 2011.
Agriculture Department food price economist Ephraim Liebtag told us.
We now have had about 6 months of higher commodity prices impacting the entire food supply chain, and so all of those higher costs are starting to work through the system.
Now, a couple of months ago, Leibtag was predicting food price inflation this year at 2 to 3%, but not anymore. He's thinking now 3 to 4%, with some products like meats and milk rising far more than that. And Leibtag told us, as he revises his forecast as the year goes on,
there's a better chance that if we make adjustments, we'll have to go up versus down.
So stay tuned. The experts say it's going to be a very interesting year for the U.S. and world economies, for food shoppers, and for all of Agriculture USA. I'm Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us today from TGM in Windsor, Illinois, is Matt Bennett to take a look at the cash grain markets. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Yeah, good afternoon, Todd.
Oh, how things can change so very quickly, it seems, sometimes. Gary Crawford from the United States Department of Agriculture produced that piece just this week. The Outlook Forum was not very long ago, and then you hear that China's heating up in their economy and there's food inflation there. That might cause a pullback. Then we have an earthquake in Japan, and there are some things happening in Chicago because of it. What's your view of the marketplace?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that have come together here, Todd. I think, you know, there's been so much buying come into this market in the last few months that eventually there's going to be some steep corrections. And, you know, all of a sudden it seems the last couple of days we've talked about acreage quite a bit, you know, and I think people have been talking about acreage for a long time, but it seems to have worked its way into one of the excuses that the market's fallen. And, you know, we've taken up this topic at some of the Outlook meetings, and we talked about it a little bit up at the Beef House, and I think most people are maybe overestimating what the acreage shift is going to be. So I'm not too worried about what the market did here these last couple, 3 days. I think a correction is good for the market here and there. And I'm not sure we're going to run back at the highs just yet, but I don't think the thing's over either.
I made note in the piece that Daryl Good produced earlier in the week about the grain stocks report. At the very end, he made a discussion of the basis and the weakness in the corn market and the fact that there was a lot of grain that was still moving. And his thought was simply that prices were high enough, it didn't really matter whether basis was weak or not, that producers thought that was a good price and they went ahead and moved it. Would you agree with that assessment?
I would agree with that. And I think, you know, anytime you get up in these areas, I mean, really $5 for a while, guys were tickled to death to get it. And then, of course, $6, guys were pretty happy to get it. And then you run up to $7. And, you know, not very many guys have sold for $7, you know, a couple, 3 years ago. You know, while it got up there, not a lot of guys had corn to sell at $7. So I think that guys weren't too awfully worried about the basis. And while the basis was fairly weak, I think for this time of the year it wasn't terribly weak. But, you know, we've seen this week it's actually weakened up a little bit.
What's your expectations as we move through next week?
As far as the basis goes?
Yes.
Well, I think that, you know, right in here, I think it's going to be pretty interesting. I don't see it weakening a whole lot, and I don't see it strengthening a whole lot just yet. But I do think a lot of these processors have been very eager to book, you know, farther out as far as maybe May, June, July, and August. And I think that the basis levels in those areas are a little bit better than what they are in the nearby. And I think that'll continue as we go forward.
And your bids for the day, if you have them in front of you?
Yeah, my cash corn bid would be 642 and fall corn 538. Cash beans 1305 and fall would be 1260.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
You have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Oatmeal Nut Waffle Day. Waffles have been around at least since the time of the Greeks. The Dutch brought the waffle to the U.S. in the 1620s. The patent for the first waffle iron in the U.S. was issued in 1869. The cast iron plates sat on top of wood or gas stoves. The first electric waffle maker was produced by General Electric in 1911. By the way, the waffle iron was the inspiration for a new sole for running shoes in 1971. The company was Blue Ribbon Sports, which today is better known as Nike. On this day in agricultural history in 1791, Samuel Mulliken of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, received a patent for a machine to thresh corn and grain. He was the first person in history to receive more than one patent. We don't know what the machine looks like. The patent was destroyed in a fire in 1836. In 1845, self-rising flour was invented by Henry Jones of Bristol. The flour was an instant hit. A year later, in 1846, Jones was appointed purveyor of patent flour and biscuits to Queen Victoria. Jones spent a number of years trying to convince the Royal British Navy to use his flour. Eventually, he was successful, but only with the help of Florence Nightingale. And in 2007, on this date, the U.S. moved daylight savings time 3 weeks earlier than in previous years in the hopes that it would conserve energy. The concept was first introduced during World War II in Great Britain as a coal-conserving measure. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us, as usual, to take a look at the agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center that belongs in part and funded in part, I suppose, by NOAA. Thanks, Steve, so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here, Todd.
You're from a remote site, actually, not from your office space this afternoon. You, though, are on campus someplace, aren't you?
I'm over in the Natural History Building on Peabody Drive with the Naturally Illinois Expo, which is sort of the open house for the Illinois Institute for Natural Resource Sustainability, parent institute that houses all the scientific surveys here on campus.
Now, have you been busy?
Oh, yes. We've had probably well over 1,000 school kids through here today, and we have been extremely busy. Things are slowing down now. The kids are on their way home, but it's been a really good day.
It's been a good day, and I know Explore ACES was happening today. That's the part of the open house that belongs to the Agricultural College, the Agricultural Consumer and Environmental Sciences here on campus. So it's been a busy day. Lots of school kids coming in, checking out the University of Illinois, see if it's a great place. And, of course, we think it is and hope that they will come and go to school here. But at this point, Steve, we want you to turn your head back to the weather at hand. Tell me about the next few days. It looks like it might be pretty nice here in the Midwest.
Actually, yeah, this weekend and into the early part of next week should be some of the nicer days we've had in the last week to 10 days. We had to put up with a pretty cloudy, dreary week here across Illinois, and actually temperatures running a little bit below normal for the week. But this weekend we'll get, we've had some good sunshine today. Looks like we'll have some good sunshine for most of the weekend, and probably even into Monday. And then by Tuesday and Wednesday we'll see another change. And it looks like we'll be getting into some rain late Tuesday into Wednesday. And then I think probably we'll keep a chance of showers around for most of the rest of the week next week. So we need to take advantage of these few days here while we can.
And this weekend we'll change time too, won't we?
That's right. I almost forgot about that. Yes. Saturday night, early Sunday morning, we go on daylight savings time. So everybody has to remember to spring ahead and set their clocks ahead an hour.
Is this part and parcel of the change from winter to spring? And when does that really happen? And what's the official dates?
I believe it's on the 21st,
yeah.
Late on the 21st. I have it written down somewhere where that right in front of me. You know, meteorologically, we're already a week into spring, which is good if you like spring. But we'll see temperatures, for example, our highest here normally in central Illinois, they're roughly in the upper 40s this time of month. By the time another 2 weeks, our average high will be around 56. So we see some pretty rapid changes in the weather over the next 4 weeks. So spring is definitely on the way.
Thank you so much.
All right, Todd.
You have a good day. That's Steve
you
Hilberg.
Too.
He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. A quick note, we did just post in the last half hour or so to our website the all-day Ag Outlook meeting. You can find it on the front page at willag.org. That's willag.org. You have a great afternoon.